The Local Thread.
Hello, and welcome to TPS Proud Out Loud. I'm Patty Mazur, Executive Director of Communications with Toledo Public Schools.
And I'm Rob Worsinski, TPS Communications Coordinator. Thanks for joining us.
Over the next hour, we're going to be discussing the transformation of the district under the leadership of our TPS CEO Superintendent, Dr. Romulus Durant.
And specifically from there, we're going to focus on career technical education. Our guests will include Dr. Durant, TPS Career Tech Director Tom Dimitru, as well as Raina Daniels, a teacher at Jones Leadership Academy of Business, and Zach Kolwicki, the welding instructor at Waite High School.
In his 12th year at the helm of Ohio's fourth largest urban school district, Dr. Durant has made a lasting impact on Toledo Public Schools. He was named the 2024 Educator of the Year by the Council of Great City Schools, urban education's highest honor. He is also the council's longest-serving superintendent. A dedicated Toledo native who attended TPS schools and earned 3 degrees from the University of Toledo, Dr. Durant has demonstrated an unparalleled commitment to Toledo Public Schools and his hometown. As the 29th superintendent of TPS, he has created opportunities for both students and the community, including the opening of 7 comprehensive magnet high schools and the renovation of the Scott Park campus, a transformative centerpiece for the district's future. His professional story has been highlighted on the Discovery Channel and in several national publications. And he's here with us today, Dr. Romulus Durant, or as I like to call him, Super Soup. Your entire career has been with Toledo Public Schools, from teacher all the way to the top. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so interesting that through midway of my football season, go Rockets, I'm a University of Toledo football player under Gary Pinkle. And midway through the season, I actually signed a contract to be a teacher in Toledo Public Schools. So we played a bowl game, I would say, in late December. And 2 weeks later, I was in a classroom teaching the fourth grade at Nathan Hale Elementary, which I truly enjoyed and loved. And I was preparing for the GRE. And so I studied the GRE words with the kids. And the kids were walking dictionaries. I mean, it was hilarious in essence of the usage, but it showed that there's no age limit on words. But went in to be a fourth grade teacher, went on to be a dean of students, assistant principal, a principal, assistant superintendent, and now the 29th superintendent of Toledo Public Schools. So it's been a blessing to, one, know the decisions that are made as a superintendent, how it impacts an individual as a student, an individual as a teacher, and an administrator, because at the end of the day, what was appreciated then is appreciated now. And so I always keep that close at heart, is that we make decisions such as when there's a snow day. I know people were looking around, Dr. Durant gonna call today. But at the end of the day, I knew what it felt like to be on a snow day and walking in shoes that were wet and had to wear them the entire day at school because I didn't have a second pair to switch into, or to be a staff member to jeopardize some sense of safety to get to school. And so those are the same appreciation that come in regards. And so it's always a blessing to be able to be in each of these positions because it helps mold your decision when you're there in the position of where the buck stops.
Right. And you had an early career goal that you set for yourself. And I love being able to tell these stories because I've heard you recite them so many times. But your career goal was to be superintendent of Toledo Public Schools.
That was correct. At the time in the College of Education at the University of Toledo, we're going through a lot of change within faculty and advisors. And I couldn't find an advisor because every time I get one, it would be a new one and a new one. And so finally, I take it upon myself to write out my entire master's degree program along with the bachelor's degree program running up into a doctorate degree. And so within that, it had the vision that, you know, one, as a teacher, you make decisions, you impact those within the classroom. Two, as an administrator, you impact those within the school building and potentially those in the community. But if you truly want to have wide-range impact up in a district, you were going to be required to be a superintendent. And knowing that most superintendent board of education required or looked favorable a doctorate degree, it's the only reason why I added the doctoral program onto my my course of study. And so what I did was went through every catalog and put out all my classes. And so what I did was wrote a plan out in essence of, you know, that I would be superintendent by the time I was 36, 37 years of age, merely if I went through the plan that was written. And so followed the plan like clockwork, took my courses when I needed to, GRE, took the master's degree, doctorate, and then I have been blessed to see a plan come to fruition.
And to say you are meticulous and plan in your life is an understatement, but your superintendent at the time when you were at TPS was a big visionary and a big supporter of you when you took over. And who was that?
Yeah, that is Dr. Crystal Ellis, the first African-American superintendent in the history of TPS. Again, we celebrated 175 years just last year. And so he had really laid the foundation. And what was unique is that Dr. Ellis, you know, was left in a most challenging situation of having to pass a levy. And I told people that at the time, had they not passed the levy, they were going to cut athletics and other things. And so I was on the verge attending a powerhouse football school. And then lo and behold, we passed in the last, you know, go around, I think, by 17 votes. And so it kind of says that had he not been able to have the ability to have the influence and support of the staff and the community to pass that levy, you know, it would be a different day and a different sign for me and the outcome of my life. And so to be able to see Dr. Ellis be able to do such thing and continue on with great things within TPS brings great pride to live up to the legacy he had already established.
And you, I've seen you, you live his legacy in so many ways because you believe in treating everyone with respect, from the janitor to the bus driver to the food service worker. You are always saying, hello, how are you? Why is that important to you in acknowledging their work?
You know, I had to take it back to East Side upbringing, born and raised on the east side of Toledo. Obviously, parents playing a large role within that. If you always recognize that I always call people by Mr. and Mrs. and had raised on that at the same time, being respectful to always look every individual within the eye. And my dad always felt like that was a sign of character and respect, is that you never look away, you never shy away, but more importantly, address people's presence when walked into a room. And so despite the position that I'm in or that I've had, that every person matters in essence of the role that they play and the impact that they have on the lives of children. And so just by giving them that moment of time really shows some sense of gratitude and appreciation that at the end of the day, this work doesn't get done without you. Despite whatever position you have, never think that you aren't that key piece that made a difference. And so by recognizing individuals, whether it's the food service worker or the janitorial custodial operator, what you'll find is many of those individuals are very in touch with what goes on in the bottom line of students. So if it's not the cafeteria worker who knew I didn't have the money to pay for lunch, and she wouldn't let me go through the line because she knew I was respectful to her. And so every time I would just go by with something that wasn't my lunch, she wouldn't take it, and she would always make me go back. And so, and I always made sure to pay my bill or whatever, but I appreciated that because she didn't have to do that. She didn't have to put her job on the line for that, but at the end of the day, she did. And that's what we have within TPS, that we have individuals who really care about kids.
Absolutely. Would you say your dad was the biggest influence or is the biggest influence in your life, positive influence?
Yeah, so when you know, I go to, you know, a lot of leadership academies, universities, and what you do is you study change agents and leadership perspective. And so I always get to ask the question, who is the the greatest leader or the greatest change agent you've read, or what books that you've read, whether it's Jim Collins and Good, the Great, and others that, you know, have changed organizations, or Demi in the auto industry, who had the biggest change significance that you believe in? And I always say my father. At the end of the day, that my dad was the greatest change agent, because at the end of the day, change doesn't start, and it starts with you. You can't change anything until you change yourself. And so because he changed himself from the rough life that he had from New York City and migrating here to the Midwest, and eventually found himself a victim of gun violence, he changed his life for three young kids that changed our trajectory in our own lives. And so myself going on to achieve 4 degrees, my brother achieved a degree in journalism along with multiple investment certifications. My sister had 2 degrees as well. All shows that at the end of the day, the true Dr. Duran of the family is my dad. He had the doctorate of life, in essence, of really truly rising to the level of what it means to be an expert and a professional in raising kids from nothing into being something.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So let's go back a few years. I've been with the district now 19 years. And when you came on board, you made TPS Proud the mantra for the district. We now go to parades and we hear people blocks away. They start to see the TPS truck coming down the road, and they see you in the back of the truck tossing out goodies to people, and they start shouting TPS Proud. What do you think that means? What does that say about the transformation of the district?
I think, in essence, just human nature is always wanting to be proud of something. And that was something that my father also had. I give him credit in raising me, is that he made sure that we understood the gravity of being grateful about who you are and where you're from. And so I could tell people, obviously, we all just got done watching the game on Saturday, Ohio State, Michigan. And one day as a youngster, very early in age, my dad had asked, or someone had asked while I was standing there, who I was rooting for. And at that time, I didn't really know a whole lot about football, but I said Michigan because I loved their helmets. And my dad told me to pack my bags and move to Michigan. and he was serious. I was like, okay, I want Ohio State.
No.
And at the end of the day, what he was about is that have a sense of pride about who you are and where you're from. If you're from the East Side, have pride for the East Side. If you're from the University of Toledo, have pride to be a Rocket. If you're from the state of Ohio, have pride to be from Ohio. And at the end of the day, TPS Proud comes from that same gratitude that, again, I'm a product of Toledo Public Schools, and I wouldn't be who I am today without them. And so showing such pride and exemplifying that pride, I think, becomes contagious with others to say, you know what, we're proud because we see you represented on your sleeve. We see you represented on your collar. But more importantly, we see you represented in your words, your voice, and your actions. And for that, I think people are grateful and also love to resonate the TPS Proud.
That's right. It's become part of your transformation of the district, the perception of the district, and the perception of promoting career tech within Northwest Ohio to take away the stigma of that. How has that been your driver of your years at the helm so far?
You know what, had really brought about great dividends in essence of, you know, focusing on things that had been forgotten upon. You know, early 70s, 80s, and even partially into the 90s, there was a heavy predication on having some sense of skill set that, you know, a person could be proud about, but more importantly, a skill set that you are proud about, because very few can possess those things. And so we had migrated away from that and got into this college orientation and separated the two, despite the rigors of many of the trades, whether it's an IBEW electrician, the mathematics is at a college level, or a carpenter, or whatever else that is in the field. We've kind of separated the two, and the reality is they're both post-secondary, and they both have same levels of rigor, but within a different mindset and a different category. And so really recognizing that, I appreciated the aspect, particularly when you talk about a trade, is that If I'm a journeyman or I'm certified, that means I'm skilled to do this. But I asked people, and I asked a young man, he came to me the other day and he said, Dr. Duran, I'm so happy I got a master's in communication. And my next word to him was, what have you mastered? And he couldn't answer. I said, what have you mastered in the field of communication that makes you feel like you are a master? Because when you hold such a title, if I'm a master journeyman or master carpenter, there are things that I say I can do, but I know my limitations within that skill set, whether it's plumbing and other things. And I said, there are some things that we had to decide on. What are those limitations? At the same time, when you achieve something, what does it mean? And so, you know, truly appreciated in essence of developing these skill sets. And so that possessed us to move forward in essence of really looking at how to align kids to their strengths, but more importantly, to careers that are within those strengths, because that's where their intelligence are. You know, when you're talking about Howard Gardner's multiple intelligence, you're talking about individuals and part of their brain and how they think and how they move, truly have the strengths and align to something that they could be proud of. And so what we want to do is begin to introduce these careers at fifth grade, allow kids to be able to decide on what they want to do, explore what they want to do, but more importantly, decide and move into that progressively of achieving and accomplishing things toward that field. And so what we've done is really started getting kids really aligned to these professions. And so we allow Career Tech along with magnet schools to be a focal point for kids to zero in on, but more importantly, to have pride about some of the things that they can do, capable of doing, but more importantly, earn a great life in doing.
All right. We're going to talk more about those opportunities in the next segment, but I have one final question for you here.
Yes.
At the end of every school year, you give a highly energized and motivational commencement speech at every graduation. You shake every graduate's hand and you pose for pictures. Mm-hmm. What do those crazy few days mean to you, and how do you think a graduate walks away feeling that they're TPS proud?
You know, that's kind of probably the highlight, and one of the major highlights of my years and career is to really see kids really to graduate and cross that stage and to enjoy that moment, not only with them, but their families. And, you know, it's just a stepping stone towards what they want to do with their lives. And so I just enjoy and always want to make sure that there's something that I say to them that they walk away with that really move them. And I think the energy that I, you know, try to provide into these speeches is something to allow kids to really feel moved, but more importantly, reflect upon and saying that, you know what, if it to be, it's up to me. And I was able to get to this far in crossing the stage, and there's many, many more stages I'm across in the future. And so I'm just excited to be able to do that. And so I make it a part of my day, and make sure that I commit to every graduate that I'm there to shake their hand, commit to every parent that I'm going to enjoy this opportunity with you along with your child. But more importantly, I always tell each and every child, particularly those who are even listening to today, I will always give you a letter of recommendation. All you have to do is email me. If you have given us your time to be educated, we will give you our time to recommend you for any opportunity of employment or scholarships, or even enrollment to post-secondary opportunities. But again, just as I tell them, I'm always, now and forevermore, TPS proud.
And I love that so much. And that is the best way I think we could end this segment. Thank you very much, Dr. D.
Thank you.
Welcome back to TPS Proud Out Loud. I'm Rob Wersinski. Dr. D is still in the house with us here. Joining us now is TPS Executive Director of Career Technical Education and Adult Education. His name is Tom Dimitru. Tom, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about yourself first. Give us a little bit back, your background. How did you get to this point? At one point, you're an English teacher.
Yeah,
I mean, talk about how you got from an English teacher to becoming the head of career tech at TPS.
It was serendipitous, to be sure. So I knew when I started in education, oh man, without getting too long-winded, I was always interested in finding a career where I felt I could have the biggest social impact. And I thought I could have an impact most effectively with young people, right? I actually started out as a psychology major, and then, you know, three quarters of the way through, I thought, you know what? Maybe as opposed to getting involved late in the process, I could get involved proactively and try to help younger people, I guess, figure things out in a way that would be almost preventative in terms of keeping them on the right path, and instead of trying to be in a career where your role is to maybe to resolve some things that have gone sideways. And so that led me into education. And I was an English teacher, but I'm not sure how much of this I should admit, but I'm just going to put it on the table, which is what I always do. A lot of times you hear people get into English teaching that subject because of their love of literature, the love of writing. And I loved those things. But in all honesty, the reason I wanted to teach that subject was I thought this is the subject that gives me the blankest slate where I can just teach these kids whatever I want to teach, and I can find a book that relates to it, or I can have them write on the subject. But it would be a way to, you know, to the extent possible, you know, dictate the curriculum or teach lessons that I thought would be valuable to them. So I did that.
At some point, you get this opportunity.
I did. I'm getting there, man.
I
took different acting assignments along the way, administrative positions at the building level. And one summer, as the school year was drawing near, this is probably my 10th or 11th year in teaching, and I've been doing about, I don't know, 4 years of acting administrative assignments at the school level as opposed to the central office, which is where I work as a career tech director. I was waiting for that phone call as the year approached to say, hey, we have an acting assignment to put you in this year, and I got it, and I was ready to accept, and then they said, we want you to come in, we want you to be acting director of agriculture, construction, and engineering technologies. And I said, no way, what are you talking about? Are you calling the right guy? I said, I have no idea about any of that stuff. And they said, no, we think you were recommended for the position, and it's just temporary assignment, you just need to be a good administrator, you don't have to be an expert in all those career fields. So I begrudgingly accepted it. And when I got there, and it was way back in the day before Dr. D, this is back when Natural Science Center was just a half-day satellite. It wasn't a satellite school. It was a satellite program. Yeah. So the kids that attended there just went there for a few hours every day. Then they went back to their home school, and then the school was closed the rest of the day. But that's where my office was because there was space. But I got out there, and I started seeing some of the things that they were doing. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, this, you know, the way the kids were up and engaged, and the projects were so interesting to me, and you know, you set foot into that place these days, and we bring people in on the tours, as I'm sure Dr. D talked about, and it's, you have this visceral experience, and you see the joy of the learners, and you realize, man, we've harnessed something here that really resonates with not just young people, but you know, kids and adults alike. So I realized, man, this is a great way to teach kids. This is different than having them in a classroom with a bunch of books, you know, on their desk. And I don't want to slight myself by admitting this. I mean, you try to bring the English curriculum to life as best you can in the classroom, but it's a whole different ball game when, you know, you have kids up doing things, you know, and specifically the things you're teaching them about, as opposed to, you know, learning it vicariously, you know, through books and pictures. So I took that assignment, and then they couldn't get rid of me. That one ended. They needed me to fill in. I'm sure I enthusiastically volunteered to supervise the business and marketing programs. So that's actually how I got my foot in the door with career tech. And then the years went by, I accumulated some experience. And when this position opened up, the big guy across the desk gave me my shot. And I've been here ever since.
So now fast forward, Dr. D, from then to now, I mean, just talk about the job that Tom's done and talk about overall just all the wide variety of career tech opportunities available at TPS.
You know what? I think, you know, Mr. Dimitru had an open mind in essence of what could be, and at the same time had a vision on how we can expand our reach as well as provide offerings. And so one of the things that he really had excelled in is really how do we get more ROI on what we're doing in the classroom around career tech, where he was able to garnish another $3 to $4 million back into the department to create more opportunity and career tech opportunity for our students, as well as capital within the space, being able to have instruments and tools that these kids can relate to. We don't have an aviation school without airplanes. We have airplanes sitting in these schools. We don't have a natural science program that has an animal science that has actually caiman or crocodile species sitting within there to learn crocodilians. And so it's been a blessing to see him go from an academics into career tech and at the same time be able to really vocalize in essence of what his world looks like compared to career tech, but more importantly, how do we begin to bring more academic courses within the career tech space for reimbursement and other things. And so these are some of the strategies, you know, through his lens that he had reached out to acquire. But more importantly, I had this blessing because my social study teacher at Wade High School got me an externship to study the apprenticeship model over in Germany. And through that, really helped formulate the vision that we had, for TPS. And so my very next thing was to make sure that Mr. Demetriou saw what I saw and experienced it. And so my mentor had allowed to provide an opportunity for him to see it just as well. And so we're now living that essence of really providing apprenticeship models in all fields.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as when we say career tech, high school, I graduated in 85. Back then, it was vocational school. And to me, I always thought, even then at that time, there was this kind of myth, like that was where the dumb kids went. And I didn't see that at all, because when I saw some of the things they were doing in some of these classes, I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I never really thought of it that way. But I know that there's a stigma of when you say career tech, and like dispelling that myth and showing opportunities and showing kids what can be and sparking interest, I know is a big mantra of what's going on at TPS.
It is, and I'm right there with you, except I didn't see those programs when I was in school. I mean, the push was exclusively college. I was sort of vaguely aware that they existed. And I'll be honest, I mean, part of what shocked me when I got that temporary assignment that I talked about and then started learning more about career tech is I started realizing, hey, there are programs like this even within the schools where I was teaching and working that I was completely oblivious to. And that ties into the point that Dr. D mentioned about he was talking about, you know, me in particular bridging, I guess, traditional academics with career tech. And he downplays the significance of this, because if he's honest with you, he'd tell you over the years, I always ask him, how have you been on top of this career tech thing from the jump? Because he really has been at the forefront. When I came into this department 15 years ago, I'd go to state level meetings and, you know, we were aware of the desperate need, and I know you'll get to this subject, but to really reinforce our workforce development pathways in all these areas of high skill, but we weren't getting the kids into them. And I think part of it is what you talked about. I think there was a perception, and, you know, to some extent, much less so, there is a perception that what was called vocational education in America, that they then rebranded as career tech, I think, to get away from that, does or did have a stigma associated with it. But then another part of the problem was that career tech people just operated in their own side, their own corner of the district, and academics in their own. This guy took a shot on me as, again, someone who came from a English education background. But historically, the way that would work is you'd be a career tech teacher, and then you'd be a career tech administrator. And what happens is eventually everybody working within career tech has only been within it, and everybody who's outside of it has always been outside of it. So there was no way to bridge that.
There are silos and never between shall meet, right?
Exactly. So, you
am
know,
I correct, Dr. D?
No, that's exactly it. And we're doing now that with the counselors and other positions, particularly those who really have a keen understanding of the benefits of career tech. And one of the things that we've been blessed to do within the career tech department and working with his leadership team, Ms. Simon, along with others, is that we've been sitting down with the universities and auditing the curriculum to be able to get college credit for the rigor that exists within the career tech space. You know, so when you look at many of these professions, the rigor to get to that qualification of certification or mastery requires high rigor in mathematics, chemistry, science, whatever that is. And for whatever reason, we've separated them and never did any auditing to say, hey, regardless if you take it, if you get college credits or not, we should provide it just merely by taking the course. And so within our construction academy that's coming out this fall, Construction Architectural Design Academy, there'll be about no less than 24 college credit merely by just going through the monotony of taking the program and going through and coming out at the end in a pre-apprenticeship, but more importantly, the rigor of the cores are at the same level of college credit.
Tom, the number of programs, individual programs that you oversee.
The exact number? Oh, man, I'm going to say 43.
Okay.
It's north of 40.
Okay.
But, I mean, we are always adding programming, so I probably should have done an accurate count before I got here.
No, but that's okay. But you have, I mean, that the thing is that there are so many different types. I mean, we're talking from barber and cosmetology, and we're going to be talking to the welding instructor later from Wade High School. But, I mean, the wide variety of opportunity is certainly there.
Yeah, and when people talk about career tech, I think there are certain career fields historically that they associate with it. One of the things that I don't want to say it bothers me, because there's nothing implicitly wrong in you know, I'm a strong advocate, as many people are, for the trades. But many times people will say, oh, you go to college, you have a career in the trades. And I think people have a certain set of careers that they regard as the trades. I got to be careful how I articulate this. They don't think about the trades, career tech referring to robotics. They don't think about it referring to engineering or information technologies or advanced, medical technologies. And that's not to in any way discredit the value of welding and metalworking and construction and advanced manufacturing, et cetera. It's just that I think what we really have to do is re-educate, I guess, for lack of a better term, the general public to understand how career fields have evolved, and consequently, education has evolved in tandem. And one of the most exciting things about career tech is that, particularly in Ohio, I'm not going to speak on behalf of every state in the country, because one thing I've learned when we participate in national conferences is that Ohio really is at the forefront of the implementation of career and technical education in this country. But the thing that's unique about it is that the curriculum is nimble, and it's adaptable, and it's meant to be informed by industry.
And it all starts with sparking interest with students. And I know over the last few years that I've been employed by TPS, I've loved the Next Step event. Mm-hmm. Dr. D, talk about the Next Step event and just getting, those middle school students interested in following a career path starting from, seventh, eighth grade and on.
Well, the unique thing is that the trip that Mr. Demetriou and I had done with the externship to Germany, then in Germany, they had to declare their occupation in the fifth grade, which is something that many of them didn't care for, because they felt like they were too young to actually declare. And what we've done is expose these kids to their strength of interest and careers within the fifth grade. So we use SchoolLink to do an assessment to assess these kids' strengths, and then we align careers that align to those strengths. At the same time, we do a survey to be able to get their interest, and then what we do is put that together and say, here are all the careers that within that. More importantly, here are the career field programs within the district that align to that, as well as the academy that align just as well. And so what we want to do is make this process seamless for parents, because many of the parents have a difficult time navigating and getting a communication or a dialogue that's productive. It usually starts like this. What do you want to do with yourself? I don't know. And that's kind of what the answer is. And what we've done is create mechanisms to be able to provide data. But more importantly, what we do with the Next Step is, one, we evaluate and assess the kids. Two, we do a career celebration month. Then at the end of that, we take you to the expo, which is at the Glass City Center, that brings all of our career tech programs along with our magnet academies. And the kids travel to each of the stations according to their strengths and survey of interest, so they can see these programs for themselves. Then we turn around and present the same data to the parents at parent-teacher conference, and make that a productive conversation. So now mom and dad knows what this survey says, knows what their strengths is. So when I have a dialogue, it's more constructive about, so I hear there's an interest in construction. What exactly it says that you may want to be a carpenter. Now that conversation is a little bit different than the I don't know and still trying to figure it out. And so what ends up happening is then kids take their field trips, and then by the time they get to seventh or even ninth grade, they're able to declare some level of what they want to do, either a magnet academy for 7th through 12 or 9th through 12, in essence of providing a career tech program that provides them the same opportunities of certification as well as college credit just as well.
How important is career readiness for Tom Demetriou?
I mean, that's the foundation of everything. Yeah. Well, important for Tom Demetriou to figure out a way to instill that in the young people. But yeah, in terms of preparing a graduate for the world after education, it is the essential, element of a well-prepared and graduating soon-to-be worker.
And then the need for industry participation obviously is a theme here from start to finish. And, I mean, just talk about how local companies have really kind of taken part in what's going on here at TPS.
Well, again, and I know this guy, he's going to embarrass me, because sometimes I shower praise on him. He tells me I'm trying to maneuver for a promotion, which I'm not going anywhere. I love what I'm doing. But honestly, I say that because he's put so much, you know, so much effort into building our relationships with our industry partners and getting them to understand that they are essential stakeholders and participants in the education process. And that's something. So when I went over to Germany several years after he did, it made more sense to me how when he came back, he was really working with some of our community agencies, workforce agencies like the Chamber of Commerce, for instance, to try to create a mechanism for consistent and meaningful industry engagement with education, which is something that is governmentally mandated in Germany, but it's a piece here that may or may not happen, depending on, you know, the energy and ambition and investment, you know, of those working in service of building that bridge between education and industry. So I tell people all the time, man, in Toledo Public Schools, we meet with more industry partners in a month than I think some other school districts do in a year. And that's not to, like, you know, cast shade on anybody. It just speaks to the fact that, you know, and I'm blessed because from day one, he's invited me to sit in on these meetings and I get to see what he does. And then I start to figure out my spot in terms of how can we keep steering the ship in the direction of more organic and meaningful industry partnership. And it's critical, man. I mean, we, for a variety of reasons, one of the greatest things about career tech education, you know, I was talking about how seeing the kids up and doing things, you know, as opposed to sitting in a classroom, pays big dividends. But the other part of it is it provides opportunities for authentic learning. You know, the kids are actually engaged in meaningful application of the skills that they're learning. And our industry partners provide opportunities for them to do that through internships, through visiting the classrooms to supervise projects, et cetera.
All right. Well, coming up, we're going to have two teachers from two completely different fields join us on the show. Tom Demetriou, thank you. Dr. Diaz, always, thank you for your time. We'll be back with more TPS Proud Out Loud. And welcome back to TPS Proud Out Loud. We're going to be joined now by a couple of teachers from within the TPS district. One, we'll first say hello to Raina Daniels. She is a teacher at Jones Leadership Academy of Business. Thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get to become an instructor at the Jones Leadership Academy of Business?
Oh, I didn't take the traditional route. Actually, I started my own business with A&R Accounting Services, and I called up Wade High School, and I was trying to find an intern. And so a student came out to my business in the accounting field, and I gave him a simple job to do, but he didn't know how to do it. He knew the theory of accounting, but he didn't know how to do accounting. And that made me want to become a long-term sub and start going into the classroom. And every classroom I went into, I wanted to teach accounting. I wanted to teach about credit. I wanted to teach how do you handle your money. In every class, I tried to instill that. And then one year, a accounting position came up, and I was there. It was me.
It was meant to be.
It was me.
It was meant to be. And then we're going to bring our other guest in right now, Zach Kulwicki. He's a welding instructor at Waite High School. And I know when you think of things to teach in school, welding, a career tech field, certainly it's been offered for a long time at Waite High School. Zach, tell us about a little bit about yourself, how you became an instructor at Waite.
Very similar to Raina. I had a very unorthodox path to teaching. I went to St. John's and went to college immediately afterwards. The general mantra that kind of was the drumbeat through the 90s and early 2000s was, if you want a good job, you got to go to college. And I ended up going to college, didn't know what I wanted to do, and ended up dropping out with $80,000 of student loan debt. And my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, said, I'm not dating the loser, so figure out what you're going to do with yourself. And I found some classes at the art museum, and one of them was blacksmithing. I took it, and we did forge welding there, and I went back. And the next time she came over to visit, I wouldn't shut up about it. And so she handed me some pamphlets for Owens, and I went there and I got my associate's degree in welding. And one thing led to another. I started teaching adult education after about 7 or 8 years in the field. I did heavy fab over at the Andersons, the rail division. And there was a company called Tarp Stop in Perrysburg. I worked on rolling Conestoga wagons. During that time frame, I was teaching adult ed over at Penna in the evenings. And then just by happenstance, a position was opened up at TPS for a welding instructor. They were revitalizing the welding program here. I applied, and I got it, and the rest is history.
So certainly a couple of people who did not take a traditional route, and certainly what we've heard during this hour from both Dr. Durant and Tom Dimitru is that there's got to be a marriage a little bit of what's being offered from a traditional sense and the non-traditional to get kids ready to enter different career paths. So Ms. Daniels, for yourself at Jones, talk about, you know, just the atmosphere there. There's quite a lot of uniqueness of what's going on at Jones.
Yes, there is. Our identity at Jones is business and leadership. And we have two different pathways that students can take. They can take the general business pathway, or they can take my love finance pathway, which I love so much. And it's basically, we want to prepare the students to go into either pathway, but just not in a theory sense of you knowing what's in a book. We want them to be able to perform the job, be able from day one when they graduate from us, be able to go straight to that job and be able to perform whatever duties that job requires. And that's what we do at Jones. We make them career ready. We give them leadership opportunities so that they can find their way.
And I know certainly a couple of things that are interesting about over at Jones. One is the Bloomberg Lab.
Oh, yes.
Tell us, take us a little bit through what's offered there through there. It's quite a thing to tap into for kids if they want to get into that type of field, being able to access the Bloomberg Lab.
Well, with our Bloomberg Lab, is basically it's a computer system that gives us real-time financial news, data, and analytics about any public company. So we will know who the CEOs are. We can look at the supply chain. We can look at everything concerning that public company. And the students can analyze whether the company is worth investing in. So then from there, we're able to do the analytics to decide if they want to add it to their portfolio, which leads us into our stock market challenge.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting thing. And I know that's been an annual event at Jones where you literally are recreating a day trading stock environment for students to work together to try to, let's face it, it's you buy low and sell high is the mantra of that event for sure.
Yes, it is. That is my baby. I started that at Rogers High School, and they brought me over to Jones, and they blew it up for me. That is my baby.
Yeah. And why is it so important? Because the students really get an eye-opener experience of of what you're trying to lead them towards.
Yeah, they're getting something that a lot of their parents never got. A lot of people are scared of the stock market. And our students are not. They're actually learning how to manipulate the stock market. And in the stock market, you can change your life. It can change you so much to know how to invest. And we teach them the risk of the market, return, the timing. We come up with strategies. They have communication sessions to reflect on how their stock did and everything. More importantly, it builds confidence in investing.
Yeah. So obviously not every student that comes through Jones is going to become a day trader, but talk about the skills and what they develop that could be taken into a lot of different areas in life later on. The pathways might be, everybody's path is unique. Everybody's mm-hmm. path is a little different. But, I mean, talk about what you think that shared experience is and how that can help students down the road.
That I believe that leads to entrepreneurship. It does, because when you learn how to invest in the stock market and you're willing to take that risk, that leads into entrepreneurship, where you're willing to take a risk on an idea, on a service, on a product, which leads to Ohio's economy growing and being very vibrant. Our market is built on small businesses, and those small businesses became large businesses. So here at Jones, we teach the stock market, we teach entrepreneurship, we teach finance, we teach business, but all of this stuff is built all into one bubble, because you can't learn one without learning the other. And through it all, it allows our students to become very productive and vibrant people.
That's going to, for me, segue into a question for Zach, because Zach, certainly at Waite, not everybody that's going to go through the welding program is going to become a professional welder. But talk about the skills that they're learning there and how that can apply to other areas as students kind of spread their wings.
So one of the things I try to tell every single kid that comes through my program, you're never going to disappoint me if you don't become a welder. It's not everyone's built to be a welder. If it's climate controlled, you're in a fab shop somewhere and it's a cool, crisp, 75 degrees with 20% relative humidity, great. But, I've been in situations where I've been outside in negative 10 or 20 degree weather, 105 degree heat. It's not for everybody. But the skills that we teach there are important beyond the welding hood. We teach effective time management. I'll give them a set of four or five or six different projects that need to be done by the end of the quarter. And I don't have a set timetable. These have to be done by the end of the quarter. I have so many kids that I need to help troubleshoot welding machines, actually get under the hood with them and show them how to troubleshoot their actual welds. All of those things that you have to be able to say, I have 2 hours a day for 5 days a week in order to get all of these projects done correctly. We teach them about critical thinking, problem solving, teamwork, communication. If one of my rules in my class is ask three before you ask me. If I'm helping somebody else, there should be at least three other people in the lab that could potentially help you with this thing, and it'll give them an opportunity to cement that information by teaching you how to do this versus me. And that goes across any discipline in real life other than just welding. But those tools, reading a tape measure, plenty of my business partners out there, my industry partners, they say, I ask them when they come to my advisory board meetings, what do you want to see out of an employee leaving high school? And sometimes I expect them, I want them to do MIG welding, vertical down, or I want them to be able to do 6G stick welding, right? 95% of them, can they read a tape measure? Can they show up on time? Are they trainable? Will they get along with coworkers? Will they put forth effort and energy? Just the basic bare minimum stuff. And the best thing is that they can apply all of these skills to, like what Raina was saying, starting their own business. They could take these skills and start a side hustle and get a small little welder at Harbor Freight and do stuff on the side and help make extra income to invest in the stock market if they want to.
So maybe there's some opportunities when we talk about the yes. students learning the business side, entrepreneurship, and some practical skills may marriage someday. Mm-hmm. You never know, right?
Yeah, so basically the way I look at it, whatever his students are doing as a side hustle, they can come to my students to take care of the business side of it.
So the opportunities.
We'll make the products. You guys can sell them.
Yes. And so, that leads into our students' LLCs.
Talk about that, because I think that is an interesting development at Jones, is that the students at Jones are now starting LLCs on their own.
Yes, they are. That's one of our strongest things that Jones is learning to own. That goes back to the stock market. You want to own it. And it allows students to operate like real entrepreneurs. They're planning, branding, budgeting, tracking expenses, pricing, marketing, and evaluating their results on how well their business is doing. It's part of financial literacy as well. And you become a financial leader. And we really need a lot of that right now. The way our economy has been going and prices are going up. Students learn how to manage money. We need a lot of that right now, too. Money management systems, and most importantly, accountability. Accountability as individuals, accountability as team members, and integrity. Just doing the right thing when no one's looking.
So in this world of AI and the world of robots putting everything together, Zach, for you, the need for welders still to this day, I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, I look at different trade, you know, websites, what have you, talking about, oh, the need for thousands every year of new welders as, you know, others retire, that the need is still there.
Absolutely. They say that by 2030, there's going to be roughly 300,000 positions needing to get filled. Because again, remember, I'm almost 40. I graduated in the early 2000s. And there was a whole generation of kids that were diverted from the workforce to go to college. So you have 15 to 20 years worth of individuals not replacing the guys that are retiring right now. The guys in their, you know, late 60s, late 50s that are looking at that far end, they're iron workers and pipe fitters or in private sector industries. We need more younger people to come in to fill those positions. And technology is always evolving. I was just watching a video the other day about laser welding. It can get far better. Don't want to get in the minutia, but they can get far better root penetration than a standard stick welder or a MIG welder can. And it's a lot easier to use. One of the things I'm trying to look at maybe in the future is show my kids not just the current technology that's out there and the technology that's been out there for the last 100 years in electric arc welding, but where is the future headed with welding as well? Automation, robotics, laser welding, all of the cool, fun toys that my kids could hopefully play with one day.
I know for myself, when I was in high school, a couple of things that so many of my instructors taught me, and from what I'm hearing from both of you, are time management. Do you respect time? Can you show up on time, be on time, respect the time element of a job? And whatever job you're doing, can you show a commitment and to be able to do something, whatever it is? We can, like you said, we can train you, but I mean, talk about that aspect if you can, about just boiling it down to simple, just but how critical it is moving forward and helping students just with those couple of basic skills, respecting time, respecting work.
Those are the soft skills. Those are the ones that we are really, really trying to incorporate in our students, because you can learn all the different pathways in the world, but if you don't have that work ethic to show up on time and to do the job that you're being paid for, it won't matter what skill set you have.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It doesn't matter. My grandmother used to say that your education can get you through the door, but your character will get you kicked out. And that goes back to those soft skills. You can have all the knowledge in the world, but you need to be willing to learn new things. You need to have an open mind. You need to show up on time. You need to do what they expect you to do, what you were paid to do. And you need to give 100% at that. I tell my students, as they like, well, why you teach? Why you stay here? You can go out in the field and you can work at any accounting firm. You can do almost anything. I was like, true. But if I did that, would I be here for you?
That's all the time we have for this week's episode. I'm Patty Mazur.
And I'm Rob Worsinski. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our guests, Dr. Romulus Durant, Tom Dimitru, Raina Daniels, and Zach Kulwicki.
Join us next time for TPS Proud Out Loud.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.